Welcome to Careertors. This week, dealing with difficult bosses, chapter 3, flavour of the month. The questions this cast answers are, what do I say when my boss introduces something new? How do I act when my boss introduces something new? And when should I adopt my boss's ideas?
Folks, if you want to avoid difficult bosses, one of the ways you can do that is become a boss yourself. Attend an EMC, Effective Manager Conference. We'll teach you one-on-one feedback, coaching, and delegation, how to roll out all the tools. And we'll teach you that with good discipline and caring about people and setting high standards, you can banish having to ever deal with difficult bosses. It's possible that a director would be a bad boss, but it's a lot less likely than first-time managers. So the way you reduce your chances of getting a really bad boss is to get promoted. Because the higher you go, less chances there are bad bosses. Hope to see you at a future Effective Manager Conference.
This podcast is especially for all of the people whose bosses read the business magazines and the books and all of the things. I went to Barnes & Noble at the weekend and there was dozens of new books to buy, business books, and every one of them's got a new idea. And this is for those of you who have a boss who reads them all and wants to implement every single one of them immediately, regardless of what last week we were doing. This week we're onto something new because we read it in a book or we heard it from someone or something. So someone who has a boss who changes their mind frequently or wants to introduce new things frequently. And what we call those people, and some people call their bosses, are flavor of the month. In other words, next month, there'll be a new flavor. And they introduce those things because they're popular and fashionable, not because they necessarily think that they will be a long-term fix for a problem or a long-term improvement. And for those of us who are not that way inclined, it's destabilizing, it's disconcerting, it feels like the sands are shifting under you. But your boss isn't likely to change. Your comfort level might not change. And we're not going to try and change your boss. That's just too hard. And so we're going to suggest some things that you can do instead.
If you were listening and thought we were going to give you guidance on how to change your boss, you should probably listen to a few more career
tools. Oh, I thought you should say, because you can hang up now because we're not going to.
Well, yeah, that too. But you should know by now that's never going to be what we suggest. No. Yeah, great. Okay, so our outline for today is don't complain about the pace of change. Don't automatically dismiss the idea and be positive, even when you don't want to be. So the first one is don't complain about the pace of change. And what we're saying is, do not tell your boss that you believe the pace of change is too much for you or for the team, the company, or even the customers. Sometimes that's a clever one, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I can handle this change.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm supporting the customers.
I'm fine with it. But someone's got to be, you know, the customer advocate here. And no, don't tell your boss that you believe this is another flavor of the month idea. That won't come across well. And it's not just about not telling your boss. Don't say that to your colleagues either. The solution to excessive change is not complaining behind your boss's back.
And if it were, if that were the solution, yeah, the world would be a very different place. You might not be right. And we're going to talk about that in a second. It could be that it's just your tolerance for change and their tolerance is mismatched. Yep. So you could not be right. It could be that you react negatively before you've taken a step back and assessed the situation. And if you act rashly, if you act in the moment, there could be a negative outcome for you in the overall scheme of things. I mean, one way to get over the fact that you don't like the pace of change in a team, one solution for your boss is just to fire you. Then it doesn't matter to him how fast you want to go because you're not there anymore. And we don't want that outcome for you. We want to, you know, just think about this for a little while and just like learn, maybe decide that you're going to deal with it differently.
Absolutely. Because you may be the type of person who is just averse to change. And if you are change averse, then it's very possible that you are overestimating the frequency, the scope, or even the effectiveness of the change that's happening. Some of us love change. We'll change our workflows just because this particular month has an R in it. Like, we don't need a lot to be the impetus or the catalyst for change. But others prefer stability, predictability, a rhythm, a routine, right? A drumbeat for everything to stay the same for as long as possible. Those of us that are wired that way are likely to see smaller changes as consequential, as happening, you know, way more frequently than they actually are. And before we react, we want to make sure that our perception matches reality and that our definition of reasonable is just that.
And it's not just, it occurs to me, it's not in the show notes, but it occurs to me now, it's not just those people who are more sensitive to change because they are change averse, but it's also everybody in some respects. Anybody who's ever said, how is it June the 10th today? How that happen? Our perception of time is warped.
Absolutely.
I am really not sure how it's halfway through 2022. Although I keep thinking it's 2023. So there you go. My perception of time is completely warped. But there might be something that's happened five times between January and now that's like once a month. Or there might be something that's only happened once between January and now, and that's only once every 6 months. But my perception of that time is completely screwed. And so actually going back and looking at the, that we're going to talk about in a minute, actually going back and looking at the calendar and seeing, okay, how many months has it been? Is probably going to be a surprise to you, whether you're change averse or not.
And if anyone listening is wondering, how could there be a big disconnect between my perception of change and my boss's perception of change, or really any two people and their perception of change or time or frequency? And I just thought of this as you said that, Wendy. I can't count the number of times I've been talking to someone and said, oh man, this day is just flying by, isn't it? And they've said, oh, it feels to me like this day is never ending.
Yeah.
It's just going for, you know, it just takes forever. And vice versa. I've gone, I've said to people, gosh, this day is just dragging. And they're like, for me, it's flying by, right? Because of perception, and everything is in the eye of the beholder. And I think getting back to, you know, what we're talking about here is, it's difficult to say what the right amount of change is, right? Because it depends on a lot of other factors. Some of that is perception. Some of it depends on the team. Some of it depends on the company, the industry, the boss, the customer, the financial circumstances, the time of year, the economy, the cycle, right? The seasons that we go through. So all of that stuff. But there are some things that are easy questions to ask yourself, right? When change comes up. So some things to consider. When was the last time your boss introduced something new?
Yeah. And that means actually going and looking on the calendar and, you know, even if you, I'm sure you didn't write it down, but roughly, you know, like, oh, it was just after that big meeting or whatever. You can work it out to the nearest week.
Or you can go back to your email, right? And say, oh, well, we got an email that kicked off this new project. So clearly, if I go back to that email, I find that I can, you know, subtract 2 weeks was when it was introduced, you know, so on. You can figure that out.
Yeah.
But the larger point is, don't just say to yourself, when does it feel like the last change was, right? Get something more clear, more objective. Then how many people did it affect? Right? Because bigger change, more people affected, that is larger scale change, right? Versus if it was just our team that was affected, right? How much of the team's work did it affect, right? And I would say this is largely related to the scale of the change, like, or not scale, but the complexity and impact of whatever the change is, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it could be seemingly innocuous, but yeah, if it changed massively processes within the team, that's a that's a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. If somebody changes the expenses system, that's like half an hour of my week. If somebody changed Gmail or our mailing system, that would be 40% of my week. You know, it's a big difference. It's a big difference. So.
Yeah. And depending on who's involved, right? Mm-hmm. Because if we changed expense systems, it'd be 30 minutes of your week. It would probably be 10 hours of Liz's week, our finance, you know? So yeah, I mean, it depends. Then here's a good one. How did your boss introduce it, right? How did you get the information? How was it rolled out? How did it come into focus?
There's a big difference between drive-by changes that your mm-hmm. boss says, hey, I don't want it done like that anymore. And then walks away, and, you know, something that was in a meeting, and then there was an email, and then they talked it through, and you had a week to implement it, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And not that I've ever worked with individuals who were just complainers. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that. Never. But I have absolutely had peers in the past who have said to me, can you believe that she just dropped that on us in a staff meeting? Mm-hmm. I mean, gosh. And I've said, well, how would you have preferred that she told us? And they said, well, I mean, maybe like an email so that we can digest it and all that. And I said, but 2 weeks ago, she sent us an email about something and you said, you wouldn't tell us this in person? I mean, make up your mind.
Right? Yeah. Let's give our bosses a break.
Yeah, let's not make it so that anything they do is absolutely categorically wrong, no matter what. So the next question is, what continuity was there, right?
Yeah, so what of the past idea or the past process continues through to this one? If you have the same process but a different IT system to manage it through, that's different from changing the process and the IT system. Or if we changed the expense system and the day we did it and who did it and how it was done all at the same time, that's super different to, oh, the expense system got an update and you have to fill in an extra field. Right?
Yeah.
That the percentage of the element that it changes, I guess, is the way to think of continuity. Okay. But, you know, how much are we taking from before into this new thing? The more mm-hmm. we bring with us, the easier the change is, the less of a big deal it is.
That's super interesting. Because when I first read this in the show notes, my brain went to more, is this logically in line with what we're doing? Or
that
does it
too.
Deviate?
Yeah.
Right? With if we have a big project where we're moving toward, you know, something we know is on the horizon or we know is one of our goals in the next 12 to 18 months, but then there's a change that seems to be contrary or take us in a different direction than what we were working towards, then that's what I was thinking with mm-hmm. continuity. Does it logically flow or is it linear with what we are working towards otherwise?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense too. Like, is it on the path that we think we're on or is it a deviation? Yeah, for
exactly.
sure.
Yeah. And the last one is, what stage is this change at, right? So that one, I think we're going to talk a little bit more about, but that's going to guide how we recommend you act on this, you know, this idea, right?
Yeah. Is it just an idea that I read in the book and I'm just floating it out there as like mm-hmm. something we might think about in 3 years' time? Or is it something I'm absolutely set on that we're changing tomorrow? There's a big difference between those two. And what happens often, not often, but what happens a lot is a boss will say, oh, I want to do it this way, or, oh, do that bit differently, or I wanted it in purple, whatever. And the directs take that as an instruction mm-hmm. when all it was a thought. And then as a direct, you come to your boss like a week later with this huge project, like, and all it's, you know, it's a PowerPoint deck with 18 slides and they're all color coordinated mm-hmm. and there's tables and there's numbers. And their boss says, no, it was just what I just, you know, was just thinking about it.
Yeah. I've done this before, right? The high I in me has done this before, right? In a staff meeting, I've told my team, hey, you know, I read about this thing or I saw a YouTube video on this thing, right? And you know, what do you guys think? What do you think that that would be something that would be valuable that we could work? And all I'm trying to do is gauge interest, mm-hmm. right? And see what's, you know, how that's received at a very, very surface level. But yeah, I've had people who said, yeah, here, okay, you mentioned this one thing and now we're doing it. And I go, oh, okay, well, that's not what my aim was, right? But interested to see what happens now.
And if you think that change happens too much, it may be that you are pouncing on those things that are only an idea. If you're a high C, mm-hmm. you probably think that your high I boss thinks about what he's saying and his ideas as much as you do before you say them out loud. And the answer is he does not. He yeah. just is talking out loud. Hearing his yeah. own thoughts out loud helps. Hearing their own thoughts out loud helps some people like work through the idea, and that's all they're doing. And yeah. sometimes they get to the end of that and go, no, that's a stupid idea. I'm not going to do that. But if you've heard halfway through and then go and do all the work, that's maybe why you think change is happening too much, or there's too much suggested change at least.
Yeah. So if your boss introduced a team-wide change by discussing it in several team meetings, by training one or more people in it, all while still continuing to do weekly one-on-ones where they also asked questions about how you felt about the change, then this is not a flavor of the month thing. Even if the change feels like it's being introduced on the heels of something else, even mm-hmm. if it feels like it's too often, that's in a lot of ways the right way to do it. And so you got to, again, kind of what we talked about, give a little credit where credit is due.
Right. On the other hand, if she doesn't discuss it with anyone, but just starts using some new acronyms, tells you to port your data to the new format and has done that 6 times this year, then mm-hmm. it may be a flavor of the month thing. There's no introduction. It's just happening. It happens right away. And it causes you to do a bunch of work every time. And it's happening every month or every other month. Then yes, you may have cause for complaint, even if we're going to tell you not to complain.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And even if you're right and your boss is a flavor of the month boss, complaining, whether to your boss directly or to your colleagues, even when it's just you venting or letting off steam, it's never constructive. It really borders on the line of gossip. And that's behavior that tears down the teams or tears down the team. And that's one of the only two things that we recommend, you know, you could fire someone for, or that could get you fired if you work here at Manager Tools. When you complain behind someone's back, they wonder if you are also complaining about them behind their back. And so it destroys trust and working relationships. And in general, it's not a good idea.
And complaining doesn't get you anywhere. It just sends you around in your own negative spiral. Mark says, worry is like a rocking chair. It gives yeah. you something to do, but it doesn't get you anywhere. Complaining is kind of the same thing. It just gives yeah. you something to do, but it doesn't help the situation.
Exactly.
Folks, I'm going to keep talking about our licenses until I retire, whenever that is. It is our most popular product by far. Thousands, I think maybe tens of thousands of people are licensees. And for only $200 a year, you get access to our Executive Tools podcast. You can only get Executive Tools, the audio, through having a license. You get the show notes for that. You get all of Manager Tools show notes. You get all of Career Tools show notes, which I think together something like 1,500 podcasts. You also get the interviewing series, which if you're dealing with a difficult boss, you might need. That'll teach you how to be interviewed. I think there's a total of nearly 70 casts in it, 20 of which are behind the paywall. It's tough having a difficult boss. And the better you are in your career, the better your relationship is, the more likely you're going to find a way around or over or under or through him or her. So come to the website, become a licensee.
Next, don't automatically dismiss the idea. So even if your analysis suggests that your boss is a flavor of the month manager, don't dismiss their new ideas without considering that they might actually be useful for the team. So a broken clock is right twice a day, as they say, and a squirrels sometimes finds nuts. No, is that the thing? but your boss may just have hit on something that will work or will be an improvement for your team, or is something that you've wanted to do forever and now all of a sudden it's their idea. Yeah. Yay! That's a good cause for celebration, not complaint.
Yeah. And Wendy, I would also say we're not trying to guess at your boss's motivation. This may just be how they are. This may be, you know, who they are as a professional and as an individual. But there are lots of reasons that people are like this. I mean, we don't know. You don't know what your boss is hearing from their boss in their one-on-ones or in their meetings. And maybe they're getting a lot of pressure to be more creative, think outside the box, you know. And so there's a lot of reasons that this could be the case. And so we're not guessing at that stuff. We're just assuming that this is how you feel because of what you've experienced and hopefully helping you through that. So in a recent cast, I think it was just a few weeks ago, Wendy, we released the T-Shaped Professional. Mm-hmm. And in that podcast, we talked about this new concept called T-Shaped Professionals, which a T-Shaped Professional is a person that has deep skills in one area, but also has is good at working with others and collaborating across the organization or across functions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Has enough knowledge of those functions to be able to collaborate well.
Yeah. And be effective. Forbes was the one who recently called it the future of work. Yes. Right? So we can just see your boss having read this, you know, big article in Forbes and deciding, hey, everyone on our team needs to now be cross-trained to do everyone else's job, right? In order to get that top of the T, right?
Yeah. And I can imagine everybody's reaction, because this is what my reaction would be inside. If I wanted to do your job, I could do it. And I don't want to, because I'm quite happy doing my own job. Right. And by the way, I'm plenty busy without having to learn to do someone else's job and then be expected to cover when they're sick or when they're on vacation and without any extra pay, by the way. Mm-hmm. And besides, this is just the latest idea and my boss will have forgotten about it in a week's time. And so you just avoid being in your boss's sights for a week and wait for it to go away.
Mm-hmm.
But that means you don't learn any new skills.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And though we derided the T-shaped professional as being a new and fashionable term, it's actually just a new term for something old. The well-rounded professional, someone who has a broad range of skills, someone who can collaborate with others across work functionality. And I mean, that skill set, that person has been desirable for 100 years.
Yeah.
Whether it's the flavor of the month or not, this new latest idea from your boss is one that you could benefit from. So learning someone else's job potentially makes you more valuable to the team, potentially gives you new skills, and hey, maybe makes you potentially a more desirable candidate on the job market if we get to that point. This is an idea that you can wholeheartedly embrace, and even if it only lasts a week or two.
Yeah, like take what you can from it. If you really think your boss is going to forget about it in 2 weeks, then roll with it as far as you can, because it benefits you. Now, not every idea or change will, but this is one, you know, just look for the positive, look for the benefit to you, because there may well be one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lastly, support the new idea. And we're going to tell you to support it even if you think it's silly. So go with this. So when your boss introduces...
Don't turn this off now.
Yeah, right.
You've made it this far.
Yeah. When your boss introduces something new, support it, which means saying positive things out loud when people can hear you.
Wendy, out loud?
Out loud. I know. So we'll go through some scenarios in a second. But first, there's three stages to an idea. There's an idea under consideration. That's the one where your boss comes in and says, hey, I read this thing about T-shaped professionals. Should we do it? There's an idea under discussion, which means we're in a staff meeting and we're having a 10-minute thing of like, when would this work for us? And then there's an idea that's being implemented, which is when there's, you know, actual project meetings or you're expected to do the change and you're working in the new way and it's happening whether you like it or not.
Yeah. I know we're about to go through each one of these, but I love this breakdown of ideas in different stages. I think this is going to be one of those casts that people go back to reference and be like, where was that? That idea, that thing about the different ideas in different stages? This is really, really good. So let's talk about the three different stages, right? So ideas under construction. These are the kind of embryonic ideas that come from sidelines in meetings, tangents, or brainstorms, right? There's usually only a 2 or 3 word description, right? It's a short thing. It's like, we could use a flag on the user account. Simple as that. That's all we know. Or what if we opened up the market in China?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a very simple idea. An idea that's at that stage would take a lot of thinking through before you could even have a purposeful discussion around it.
And these are easy to support because there's nothing in supporting them that means that it's actually going to be done. It just moves it from this stage to the next stage. So I can see why you think that's valuable to us or our team. You can say that and mean, I can see useful applications in other teams or other companies and not ours, but that doesn't mean you can't say it.
Yeah.
I'm excited about giving it a try.
Oh, yeah. Can I just emphasize one quick point here? We've done this before about how you say things.
Oh, yes.
Right? So I just want to go back and reiterate what Wendy said when she said, I can see why you think that's valuable to us. Wendy is not saying, oh, I can see why you think that's valuable to
yes.
us. Right? Those are the same words said very differently.
Yes.
Okay? So if you're, well, I guess if you're only reading the show notes, you're not hearing this. So this is pointless. But
yeah. I had a conversation with Paul this week. And I was in a meeting with him. The meeting ended. And what I wanted to say was, thank you for supporting me in that meeting, because he did. And I realized if I texted that to him, it would sound like, thank you for supporting me in that meeting, like completely sarcastic.
Sarcastic. Because
he didn't speak up, but that's what I wanted in that meeting. And so I had to call him and say, hey, I was going to text you this, but it would sound really bad. So I'm telling you the words. And if I hadn't thought that through, which 9 times out of 10, I don't, I would have said, thank you for supporting. And he would have read it as negative. And I actually meant it in a positive way. So have to be careful with these words and the way
right.
you say them and not writing them down, but saying them out loud verbally if they can be read two ways.
Great point.
Where did we get to? I'm keen to see the team try new things and see what makes us better. Or I hadn't thought of that. Thanks for sharing it. Thanks mm-hmm. for sharing it is, you know, it doesn't even say it's a good idea. It says, thank you for sharing the idea
with yeah.
me, you know?
Yeah.
So they're not disingenuous, any of these. You
no.
can say them and genuinely mean them.
Yeah. And the best part is, well, maybe not the best part for everyone. The best part for me at this point would be, there's no work yet.
No.
This isn't me signing up for work. I'm not signing my team up for work, right? I'm just saying, hey, yeah, good idea. Thanks for sharing, right? Like, oh, interesting
exactly.
thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if your boss's idea is in this stage, offer to help them work through the next stage. And it's a supportive act. And it gives you the opportunity to influence the way that this gets potentially implemented. And that is very helpful,
indeed.
Right? Especially if you think this idea is maybe not the best and
yes.
could be better, you getting a chance to kind of help guide its implementation definitely would be beneficial.
So the next stage is ideas under discussion. And so this is the stage where you actually think through all of the elements that go into making a decision to proceed. So again, we're not deciding that we're going to do this project or we're going to make this change. We're thinking about all of the elements and gathering data before we make that decision. So things like time and cost and level of effort and effectiveness and the effect on other teams and the effect on customers. Those things, and if you have a flavor of the month boss, it's probable that they're not thinking about any of those things. That doesn't mm-hmm. mean you can't get them into this stage by being the author of the or the supporter of the idea. It means that, oh, yes, boss, I love that idea. And let me help you because we need to consider the level of effort on this team.
Yeah.
That's a much better place to be than your boss just deciding. And in this stage, you are trying to answer the question, should we do this? And you can support both the upsides and express your concerns about the downsides because no decision has been made yet. And right. And when you hear that people should be able to give input and give feedback to their boss, this stage of ideas is what they're talking about. They are not talking about feedback in the manager tools term to your boss. They're talking about being able to discuss an idea, talk about the pros and cons before it's decided.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that all too often, it can be tempting to jump right to implementation, which, I mean, goodness, imagine your boss just coming up with an idea and then you saying, well, how would we do that?
Mm-hmm.
We're not even there yet.
Yes.
There's steps for a reason, which is why I think this is great. So even if you believe the idea to be catastrophic, I mean, just awful, right? Don't say that in public. Express your doubts in private with your boss. And note, the likelihood of your boss having an idea that's truly catastrophic is very minimal. In 99 probably point something percent of choices or decisions at work, there's no empirically right answer. There's no empirically wrong answer. There's weighing of circumstances and facts and priorities and having to, you know, shoulder the burden of making that decision. So don't try to prevent disaster. Try to encourage success.
Be on the side of light. Yeah.
Exactly.
And if the idea is unethical or immoral, then yes, you should do something about that and you should say no. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it so rarely is.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So the last stage is the idea being implemented. So your boss, someone else, has weighed up all the issues, maybe satisfactorily to you, maybe not, and decided this is the way forward. And at this point, you murder the unchosen alternative and you line up behind that idea. So murdering the unchosen alternative is one of my favorite phrases, and it comes from the guidance we have in the podcast, Professional Subordination. So murdering the unchosen alternative means that while we can and should make a case for a given course of action or have an opinion or suggest an idea, once a decision has been made, all other previous ideas are considered moot and no action is taken towards them. Whether you are a supporter on the path that was taken or a different one, as part of a larger organization, your obligation is to lay any differences aside once the decision has been taken and act on the decision without any regard to previous opinions.
Absolutely. Don't be a roadblock in the path. So whatever your boss suggested, try the idea with an open mind. Don't avoid implementation. We know you can find excuses to do so. We can too.
Yes.
In fact, we can always find reasons not to change. Whatever your preferred method is, we can find a reason not to use that method. It's just human nature. But imagine that you suggested your preferred method and we told you, no, we're not going to do that because of X, Y, and Z. Your natural inclination is disbelief. Your conviction is so strong that your method is right that you can't understand why we wouldn't try it. Well, others are as convinced about their methods. So your boss may not necessarily be representing them well, but that doesn't mean that the idea doesn't have some merit behind it.
I was reading something the other day. I was on a random corner of Medium, I think, and I ended up in a group of people, and you know how you read a web page and you go to the next one and the next one. I ended up in a group of people who hate getting things done and think it's the worst idea in the world, doesn't work. And I just thought, wow, I have never heard anybody who didn't love that idea. And all the people that do love it are absolutely evangelists for it.
Oh, it's like a cult-like thing.
Almost, yeah. And yet, there's this whole group of people who think it's the stupidest idea they've ever heard.
Oh my goodness.
So, you know, as convinced you are of your idea, there are people that fundamentally disagree with it.
Yeah, it's so funny that you said that, because just this week I was presenting to a group and I said, who's heard of Getting Things Done by David Allen? And no one raised their hand. It was the first time. It was the first time, because it fits so well with in our space of, of the things that we talk about and the things that we do. And so it was the first time I had zero hands. It's always one, two, you know, sometimes half the room, but never no one. And I was thinking, what is going on? It reminded me of, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but sometimes if I go to look at my phone and I don't see any social media notifications, no emails, I go check my email. If I go for a period of, 15, 20 minutes where there's no notification, no bell, no nothing. And when I go look for things, there's nothing new. I start to think that there's a zombie apocalypse going on and I am just somehow like right at the precipice of it. That's what it was like. I got that same feeling. Like, what is happening
to the world?
Right.
Where half our audience doesn't believe in getting things done. That would be a weird day.
Yeah, very strange. Very strange.
Here's another way to think about this. When you've actually tried the idea, when you've done the change, when you've gone through this new process or changed or tried this new software, you actually have data about whether it works or not. Until then, you're just arguing against your boss's brilliant idea, which gets you nowhere, right? It's just my opinion versus your opinion. And now if you try it, you have concrete data about whether or not it benefited you, whether it benefited your team or your customers. Like, there is no weight to your protests before you have actually tried it. But actually afterwards, with actual reasons and examples, you're much more likely to be convincing. And if your manager really is the favor of the month kind of manager, she'll have forgotten about it before you even have to present your findings. So you just let it lie.
And even going back to our point earlier about being able to, you know, have a hand in the implementation, think about how much more helpful it will be having all of this data to be able to guide implementation in the future, to be able to say, hey, so, you know, last time we tried it this way, we did this, you know, the team didn't seem to really, you know, get on board. So what if we did this way, you know, this time, right?
Yeah.
So much more helpful.
Let's take it slower this time. Let's not do it in our busy period. Let's do it when we've got onboarded that person and we're not a person short.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. The flavor of the month bosses are irritating because they get in the way of what we want most, which is effectiveness. But that doesn't mean you're A, correctly characterizing your boss's efforts, or B, that they have no merit. And if you never try something new, you will never become more effective. So by being open and willing to try new ideas, even if they come from your flavor of the month boss, you're much more likely to come across something that will make you better.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.